This podcast is recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. The country we now call Australia was built on the stolen lands of hundreds of unique Indigenous nations, and we recognise that as white women, we continue to partake in and benefit from the act of colonisation. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Welcome to Book Slut, a podcast bringing erotica out of the gutter and into a snobbier gutter. Hi, my name is Abby.
And I'm Sam. It should go without saying that this podcast is not safe for work, so put your headphones in. Hey folks, just a content warning. This episode mentions abusive relationships and some discussion of rape. As always, please take care of yourself, and if those topics aren't something you want to hear about today, now's a good time to switch us off.
Okay, I want to take us back to a different time, Sam. A different time. It's 2009. I Got a Feeling is number one in the Australian charts.
Oh, really? Did you look that up?
Yeah, I did.
Good for context.
Yeah. Kevin Rudd is Prime Minister.
Kevin 07,
exactly. And a London television executive named Erica Leonard begins writing fan fiction on a website devoted to Twilight. It's picked up through a series of unfortunate events. And the week that the first book in the series went on sale, which I think is 2012, It hits number one on the New York Times bestseller list.
Yep.
We are, of course, talking about 50 Shades of Grey.
Ooh.
And, I mean, obviously our plan was originally to kind of use it as a jumping off point for having a little chat about BDSM, which...
Bondage and discipline, dominance and submission, and sadism and masochism.
Yeah. So we were going to chat about that, and we will, because it is like a part of it, but what happened was we both just got a little too involved in the book itself.
Yeah, and I think that it's worth, like, exploring a fair bit about the book itself and kind of, like, the cultural phenomenon around it. Because It really has shone a light on romance fiction, romance... I don't want to call it erotica, because it's not erotica. Mm. It's erotic romance, I guess. It's on the more sexy end of a romance novel.
It really catapulted BDSM into the limelight, and we'll kind of talk a bit about why we think it got so popular, or like what we've read about it. But it's good to keep in note that this is obviously not the first book to write about these matters. Yeah. I mean, and you have like essentially the namesakes of it. You have the Marquis de Sade, which I read when I was quite young.
Was it in your 100 books to read before you die?
I read both of his. He's got two big ones. Highly problematic books.
Right, yep.
And then I didn't know as well, but in 1870 there's also the book The Story of O, which I knew about, but I didn't realise that the name Leopold von Sacher-Masoch is also the namesake for masochism.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know before this.
I was neither like, that's did I. Fun. Learning. Yeah, I think it's worth... I think it's one that we sort of wanted to do, but we're kind of like shying away from because it's such a big one, but it's also like super cringe. And I think that whenever I talk to people about this podcast, they're like, oh yeah, like 50 Shades of Grey. And I'm like, no.
Yeah, also, on that note... It's 500 fucking pages. I didn't realize that going into it.
You didn't know what you were signing up for.
It took those 500 pages out of my flesh. It was... I'm going to be real. I'm going to be upfront. This book is heinous. I hated it. I truly, truly hated it.
So for more context, so Abby's read the book. I've never read the book. Neither of us have seen any of the films before. No.
Up until this point, my interaction with this book was that at Sam and my old house, an old housemate had left the three books. And sometimes when drunk, I would do dramatic readings.
They were great. Isn't it funny how we ended up essentially
the exact same thing?
So I think also, just before we dive in, something that struck me a lot when reading about it, though, and I think we need to address it like up front, is that it's very possible to be critical of this book while still having respect for the romance genre, while still having respect for erotica, while still having respect for kink, especially BDSM. A lot of the critiques that I've read kind of lumped these things in together and were quick to like be like, ha ha ha, this is ridiculous. Romance books are ridiculous. Mm. Things that women read are ridiculous.
Mm.
And I just want to be like careful as we tread these waters, which we do in most of these episodes, to make sure that like that people know that you can engage critically with a book like this without being dismissive of everything else around it.
Yeah, I agree. And I have like thought about that a bit actually while reading this. Because I know it's a really popular book. I know a lot of people liked it. And there are positives. I do have a list of positives that I'll get to. But it was also just about... I mean, a lot of the problems that I had with this book is... you can do better.
Yeah.
You know, we can do better.
Yeah.
This chick, E.L. James, I don't think she can do better, but she should have. So...
Yeah. I mean, yes, I agree with you. It should have been done better. But it's a good point to remember that we do hold works to this higher standard, or that they are subjected to more like vitriol when they are by women for a female audience. It's just,
yeah,
it's a recurring theme of this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, in stark contrast to our last episode, there is no plot in this book. In these 500 pages.
It's a good break. I was tired of plot.
So there are things that happen, but I don't think I would call it a plot as such. The plot is summarized as girl meets boy. That's it.
Oh.
There are issues. Also, surprisingly, it's not actually just a story about Anastasia Steele and Christian Grey. It's a story about Anastasia Steele, Christian Grey, Anastasia Steele's subconscious.
Oh.
And Anastasia Steele's inner goddess.
Oh, yeah.
They get a lot of mentions.
Oh, God.
A lot of fucking mentions. Like, they're real people. So Anastasia Steele also maybe should speak to a therapist. Because it's a lot of like, my subconscious was hiding behind a chair while my inner goddess was dancing to the maracas. Like, it's... I was not prepared for that. But I have some I have some good quotes. That we can experience both of these personalities of Anastasia Steele.
Oh, good. It does make me think immediately of... in My Dad Wrote a Porno, when Belinda's mind does all this stuff, yes, like separate to her body.
It's very like that. It's very like that. I had one that's like not really related to much else, but I just loved it so much. My subconscious is furious, Medusa-like in her anger, hair flying, her hands clenched around her face like in Edvard Munch's The Scream.
Wow, so she, like, properly, like, envisages...
Oh, yeah, her subconscious has, like, glasses. She's, like, a kind of, like, stern, kink-shaming, slut-shaming librarian.
Oh, wow.
And the inner goddess is, like, she dances a lot.
So they're, like, kind of, like, almost, like, separate characters.
Yeah.
I mean, except that, from what I gather, it was written appallingly. That's kind of an interesting, like, literary device. So, like, well done.
But to tie back to our last episode, E.L. James, big fan of the ellipses, big fan of the dot, dot, dot. And you know how I feel about a dot, dot, dot.
Look, Abby, I don't know how you expect people to convey suspense otherwise.
Oh, okay, how about this one? His voice is warm and husky, like dark melted chocolate, fudge caramel, dot, 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 or something.
Oh, that's so lazy.
Or another misc confectionery of your choice.
Also, that I just got really big deja vu from our very first episode. Yeah, yeah.
Where his eyes were bittersweet melted chocolate or something. Yeah. Anyway, so plot-wise, right?
Yeah.
Anastasia meets Christian Grey when she goes to interview him for her university's newspaper because her best friend is sick who's supposed to do the interview.
Well, that was a lot of plot.
I mean, is that the plot? That's just like... That's just like a thing that happened in her life.
Okay, go on.
There's a lot of things that happen. All right. I just feel like on a broader scale, you know. So he's presenting awards at her graduation.
Okay.
But he's quite young. I can't remember exactly how old.
28.
Okay, there you go. And she's 21 or something.
Yeah, think about that. Wait. Because he's a billionaire, right?
Yeah, or a multi-billionaire or something, yeah.
And just like, that should be a red flag in and of itself. No 28-year-old has accrued that much wealth unless they're evil or their family was evil.
Yeah, well, so he's adopted.
Okay. Does that come up?
Does come up and there's a whole thing.
Oh.
There's a whole thing is about it. It's part of the, like, this is why I am into BDSM, essentially, is because of all of these terrible things that happened in my past. We'll get to that.
Okay.
So as I went through the book, because I was reading it in bed, I would also kind of do little summaries of the chapters.
Oh, no.
At the end, so I could remember.
Abby's just showing me her scribbles in the book.
Yeah, I also have scribbles in the back.
They look like rage scribbles.
So, I mean, I do have a lot of underlines that just say nope. So, so I have my first problem came up on page 7, where she like literally trips over going in to conduct the interview, and it's like this. I'm this bumbly girl. And she's embarrassed about it, right? And I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But then I started thinking, and so the first chapter is 16 pages.
Uh-huh.
I counted in the 16 pages how often she was embarrassed or blushing or flushed.
Oh,
10 times.
Wow, that's a high ratio of it's embarrassment
like,
to pages.
To the point where I feel like E.L. James should actually be telling me when she's not blushing. I want, like, that's the, like, interesting part to me is when she's not, like, on fire.
It already feels like it's...
The power dynamic is established really early in this thing. She trips over, she's embarrassed, he's always cool, calm, and collected, she can't tell what he's thinking, and then...
Like a vampire.
Ooh. Sorry, come on. And, like, at one part she says he makes her feel like an errant child. You know, like, really, really established. But I did write in this bit here of my summary of chapter 1, nothing worse than other romances.
Oh, right, as in, like, it's comparable to other...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's just...
Well, already I'm like, got a billionaire, we got a young... Like, this is very, like, billionaires... What is it? What was it called? The virgin...
Virgin bride. Virgin princess. Virgin something. Yeah.
It's a classic formula.
Yeah. Anyway, so then, I don't know, somehow out of this, what actually sounds like a terrible interview, out of this, he decides that he's into her. So then he proceeds to, like, follow her around, essentially turns up to her place of work, which is, of course, a hardware store, and they have this, like, flirty, but she doesn't understand conversation around, like, zip ties and stuff.
Oh, no. Anastasia.
And he's already really possessive about her.
Also, like, how did he find out where she works?
We'll get there. Chapter 3, in my summary, I wrote, boring conversation, near-death experience.
Wait, your near-death experience?
No, her near-death experience. She almost runs into a bike and he saves her.
Okay.
That's that.
Yep, yep.
Then she gets drunk.
Oh,
and
dear. Oh, no.
She calls when she's at a bar and she's like, what do you want? And...
Pot.
That's what you want. Well, being there. Oh, because she's also, like, doesn't drink alcohol. Like, this is, like...
Oh my god, so this whole like virtuous.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's real like real. So then he turns up at the bar.
Okay.
She has
sober? Like
sober.
Hey baby.
She's out there with her friend. She's gotten drunk. She's been like blah, and he's like, "Oh, hey." And then she's like, "How did you find me?" And he was like, "I tracked your phone."
No. No, no, no. Big red flag. What? Like,
yeah.
Also how?
I don't know. He's a billionaire. He's got, like, billionaire secrets.
Fuck me. Is she alarmed?
She's throughout the entire book, she's like kind of alarmed, but not too alarmed.
Is that because he's hot?
Yes.
Right.
It's because he's just like so, you know, he's Christian Grey.
Yeah, right. I was listening to something the other day and they were talking about applying the Steve Buscemi test.
The actor?
Yeah.
Wait, what's his test?
So essentially, the test is when a character does something and like they let it slide, or it doesn't have to be a character, anyone, any man does something and then you let it slide and then you reposition Steve Buscemi in there. And if you're still okay with it, it's fine. But if you're like suddenly mortified by it, then it's probably a red flag.
That's great.
So, like, if Steve Buscemi showed up at my workplace.
Yeah, it's like, well, no, well, you're drunk having just called them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the other thing that I briefly want to mention that really bothered me about this book, and it's, again, a whole other conversation, it's so white. It's, like, really upper middle class white.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one character who's her friend, Jose, and they're both drunk at this bar and Christian Grey turns up when Jose is trying to make out with Anastasia or Anna, and she's saying no, and he's essentially like assaulting her, right?
Fuck, okay.
And so the one character who's not white gets positioned in this kind of like weird predator role.
Yeah.
This weird villain role, which is
problematic.
Problematic.
To say the least.
And then it's this whole thing. And then, you know, so then Christian's always like, no, you don't know what you're getting into with me. I'm broken.
I'm damaged.
You don't understand me.
No, I hate that. And it's so common as well. Like, I don't know if you've dated people, but I've certainly dated people who have.
Oh, yeah. I'm
no good for you. I'll just hurt you. I'm broken. I'm a mess. Ugh. And then, like, when you date them and they do treat you like a piece of shit, and then if you say anything, they're like, well, I told you I was broken. As though that excuses their shit behavior.
Yeah. So there's a lot of that. And then he goes, you know, okay, I want to fly you to Seattle in my helicopter. And we need to talk about this thing. That is why this thing that I have, that's why I'm trying to warn you off without saying anything about it. Like, just, I have a thing.
Do not get in the helicopter. No.
But also, he's also like, oh, are you applying for internships? Have you heard about my company?
No.
Like,
you can't do both.
I know.
It's just not okay.
What is happening?
Like, look at you asserting power in different, like, channels.
Exactly,
as well.
Right? And she's, to be fair, she's very like, no, I don't want to go into your company. I'm looking at other places. He's like, tell me where. She's like, no. And so that's cool.
Okay.
So then I wanted to read out this other thing I found really problematic. So we're now at page 84. Blah, blah, blah. She's about to get ready. She's getting ready to go. And her best mate, Kate, is hanging out. And they live together. And she says, under Kate's tireless and frankly intrusive instruction, my legs and underarms are shaved to perfection, my eyebrows plucked, and I am buffed all over. It has been a most unpleasant experience, but she assures me that this is what men expect these days.
Sleek like a dolphin! I fucking hate that. Also, 2009 or 11 or whatever, like...
Yeah. And then, so there's like...
Wait. And her mate Kate isn't like, you're getting into a helicopter with a fucking stranger?
Oh, well, no, this is the other thing. Kate does start to be like, you know, he's quite controlling. There are some warning bells. We should, like, you be careful. You know, are you sure you want to...
Is that, like, in between?
Are
like,
you sure?
Ripping all over?
Yeah, well, this is at the beginning, you know? Like, as it gets on. And then Anna just goes, you don't understand him. You don't understand our love. You don't know. You don't know. And it's just like, fuck me, dude. This is your best mate who is actually concerned about you. This is some dude you've known for like 2 weeks that you're like bending over back. Anyway, so yeah, Kate does have some.
Kudos things. To Kate.
So, sorry, I have to take a breath.
Yeah.
So, One of the positive things that I liked about it, even though it's also kind of a negative, he's often being like, you don't have to do anything you don't want to. You don't, like, I need your consent to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, you can leave at any time, blah, blah, blah. But we'll talk about that a bit later because she, you know, there's some questions about this. But they're at his house in Seattle, his massive apartment that's just like... And the other thing, I found it a little American Psycho-esque in the amount of detail she went into about all of his possessions.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay.
It was like rich people porn. Oh. Like, it was just like, oh,
well, and he's got a... that's part of the fantasy, right? Is like being swept away by this billionaire man.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, his apartment is actually an art gallery and he has... I don't even know how to pronounce the name of the car. Audis? Audis. Is that it?
He's so poor.
Anyway.
I don't know. How you
pronounce it. She's really into classic literature.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. And he buys her these like super expensive. He's also showering her with really expensive, inappropriate gifts.
This right? all sounds like controlling power play stuff. Yeah.
So he gifts her with Tess of the Dubervilles. Dubervilles? Durbervilles?
It's Durbervilles.
It's definitely Durbervilles. I was just... I was
there.
The Durbervilles. Like, first edition, blah, blah, blah.
That would be so expensive.
Yeah, super expensive. And then she's like, why'd you do it? I don't want them, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, it seemed appropriate. I could hold you to some impossibly high ideal like Angel Claire or debase you completely like Alec d'Urberville, he murmurs, and his eyes flash dark and dangerous. If there are only two choices, I'll take the debasement.
Fuck off!
I whisper. And I read that, and so, I mean, maybe not everyone has read this book, but I read that and I was like, you mean the rape?
Yeah. That's it.
You mean the rape of Tess, right? Like, that's... It's not debasement.
It's not, like, some sort of, like, mysterious, dark character. Like, for those who haven't read Tess of the D'Urbervilles, Alec is a piece of shit rapist.
Yeah. Debasement?
Yeah. No. Hard pass.
Like, it was quite honestly really shocking for also, me to read that.
Like, what is... It's an interesting, like, little hat tip from E.L. James to Tess of the D'Urbervilles. Like, what was she trying to... Obviously, she must have read it.
Yeah.
Like, what was she trying to convey by bringing that in?
Yeah. Yeah.
Thomas Hardy would be fucking turning in his grave.
So, they sleep together. This is the first time that she sees his red room of pain.
Okay.
So, he's like, I have to show you something. And this is the other thing that bugged me about, particularly this part. It's like, you haven't... talked about bondage. You haven't talked about what being a dominant is by this point. You're like, you know what the best way to introduce an entire novice is to this entire world of kink? Let's take them into a room full of like whips and chains and be like, this is me. With no context whatsoever about it. Like,
oh God. Like, is it,
why? Huh? I don't get it. Like, why would you do that? You haven't... all you've done is been like, I'm damaged.
Here are my whips.
Here's a whip.
Yeah, that sounds terrifying.
Also, so I have some good parts of the Red Room. It just sounds incredibly uncomfortable as a place. There's no bedding, just a mattress covered in red leather.
Oh, no.
And satin cushions piled at one end. What? A red leather mattress.
Oh, you are sticking to that. I guess, like, sensation-wise, maybe that would be interesting.
But it's, like, the only bedding? The only option you've got is the red leather mattress.
Yeah, that... Can you take, like, the leather off? Bitch to clean.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is. But, so this is when we first get introduced to this idea of BDSM.
Right.
In the kind of sexual context, not in the kind that he's a dominant...
I think they made that very clear.
Yeah. So yeah, the control thing has already come up a lot to this point where there are things like he always orders for her. He's really upset by like what, like that she doesn't eat because she can't eat around him because she's like so nervous and whatever.
I don't know. I can't tell if you're cherry picking or if I just genuinely hate everything in this book.
No, you genuinely hate everything in this book. I honestly, like, no, this is not cherry. I've gone pretty, like, in depth with lots of the steps at this point. He calls her Anastasia when she explicitly tells him that she prefers to be called Anna.
Okay.
And he makes a point of calling her Anastasia.
Right.
There's a part where she's like, you know, the waitress comes over, he orders Pinot Grigio. She's like, no, I want Coke. And he's like, no, you'll have Pinot Grigio. Like, that's...
No, I will ply you with alcohol, actually.
Well, yeah, there's parts where he plies her with alcohol because she doesn't communicate with him otherwise. So he, like, actually admits to getting her drunk so that she would tell him how she feels. That's right. Later on in the book.
Fuck me.
You know, one time she calls him, she'll talk to him after work, and she doesn't, and she has 5 missed calls on her phone and a voicemail. Like, he purchases 2 tickets on a plane so that no one can sit next to her. Yeah, there's a lot.
That's... So all of this stuff within that book, that's not done in, like, a... within a sort of context of, like... like, that's not sexual...
No, so what happens, skipping ahead, essentially, he gives her a contract that sets things out, yeah. And we'll talk a bit about that, but she doesn't sign it for most of the book. She hasn't signed, most of the book is just, will I sign it, won't I sign it, will I sign it, won't I sign it, I don't know, oh, I love him, oh, but he loves this thing, will I sign it, won't I sign it. That's the book.
Yeah.
So all of this stuff is happening with, like, the... knowledge. Well, some of it happens with the knowledge, like once she's in this red room of pain, which I fucking hate that title, but anyway, with the knowledge of, like, kind of what he's into, like this kink, but not in the context, they haven't discussed it in the context of, like, this is okay, this is not okay.
Yeah, okay. Because it sounds like, because, like, not all dom sub relationships are strictly in the bedroom.
Yeah.
You know, like, there are plenty of people who consensually engage in, like, a dom-sub dynamic outside of the bedroom. But, like, what you're describing to me sounds more like an abusive relationship.
Yeah. And he says, you know, I'm into 24/7, like, dominant sub. So there is some... but without any explanation of what that is.
Also, like, that's a fucking leap. Like, if you've never engaged in anything like that before... and also, like, the book itself, like... BDSM in a mainstream context is pretty new, and you want to skip straight to 24/7? Like, that's pretty full on.
Yeah. So she gets introduced to this, and this is kind of where we start seeing the real, like, her reactions to it are pretty much discussed throughout the entirety. So she says, you know, what is the appropriate response to finding out a potential lover is a complete freaky sadist or masochist? Fear. Yes, that seems to be the overriding feeling, right?
Right, so she's not, like, having a good time.
No. He likes to hurt women. The thought depresses me.
Jeez. Okay.
You know, Kate had said he was dangerous. She was so right. He's dangerous to my health because I know I'm going to say yes. And a part of me doesn't want to. A part of me wants to run screaming from this room and all it represents. I'm so out of my depth here.
Yeah, right. Okay.
You know, this is what I cannot reconcile. Kind, caring Christian who rescues me from inebriation and holds me gently while I'm throwing up into the azaleas, and the monster who possesses whips and chains in a special room.
So, like, the thing that upsets me about some of these is that, like, I mean, there's lots of things to be upset about, but, like, it doesn't sound like she's actually able to, like, even if she's consenting to things, which it sounds like there is some level of consent happening. It's like, well, if you're internally, like, having those kind... it doesn't sound like she's able to express that she's uncomfortable or that she needs to slow things down. It sounds like she's, like, really just trying to, like, appease Christian out of fear of losing him or out of fear of whatever the fuck might happen. I actually read an article called Double Crap, Abuse and Harmed Identity in 50 Shades of Grey. And essentially what the researchers did is a bunch of them analyzed the book with reference to the US Center for Disease Control, the CDC. They've got definitions of emotional abuse and sexual violence. And they go through and, like, they cross-reference with that, like, official document. And they essentially found that it there were like so many examples of behavior, the stalking, the intimidation, the isolation where you like limit social contact with other people, use of alcohol to compromise consent, dismissing people's boundaries, and also like her behavior doing this, like when she's got the constant sort of perceived threat, altering her identity and stress managing. So like behaviors to try to like keep the peace.
Mm.
All of those things are like very well recognized.
And she, but the thing I didn't realize about this as well is that she does not give a shit about his boundaries either.
Oh, so interesting.
He doesn't like being touched.
Okay.
And she does not respect that at all.
Oh, so, because that's the thing that you don't often hear when you read about,
yeah,
50 Shades.
So the two things that really surprised me was that, like, he's like, I don't like being touched, because he has like some sort of trauma, which I still don't know about. I'm not going to read the rest of the books to find out. And she is constantly kind of like, she touches him and then he kind of pulls away and then she gets upset by it.
Yeah, right. Okay.
But it's also like, he's explicitly told you that he doesn't want to be touched.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he also is like, I don't want to be in a relationship. I don't want to, like, he doesn't sleep with his partners in the same bed as his partners. And that's something that she just cannot deal with.
Yeah.
And will often ask him to sleep in the bed with her. And then he does. And him doing those things are seen as him recovering.
Oh, yeah. This all like, oh, I can fix him.
Yeah. Like, my love will fix him through touch. Like, if I can't touch him, I can't show him how much I love him. Blah, blah, blah.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Yeah, like there's that. And then there's also, so it turns out that he was initially a sub.
Oh.
He was in a sub relationship with an older woman, which is his mother's friend. He was 15.
Oh, no.
And she was older.
Okay.
I don't know, in her 40s or something, I guess. And yeah, there are also power dynamics there that I think we can all recognize as problematic. They were in a relationship for a really long time, Christian and this woman. Like, I think, I can't remember, like 6 years or 9 years or something. So, you know, he grew up with this. Anastasia, or Anna, cannot let it go.
Yeah, okay.
Cannot let this go. The amount of hatred she has for this older woman is disproportionate and really fucked up.
It's interesting how, like, I mean, the 15 thing is hard to look past, but it's also like, from E.L. James' point of view, it's like,
why did you feel the need for him to have this thing in his life? Because it's used as a way to like explain that, and the fact that his birth mother was a and to quote, crack whore.
Oh my god.
Are used to explain like why he's into BDSM.
Yeah. And sure, like some people are into it because they are working through some stuff and there is some trauma, sure, but that's not the case for everyone, and it kind of demonizes it in a way that I'm not super comfortable with. But also, like, it sounds to me like it's an opportunity for E.L. James to be like, to essentially shame that relationship and be like, this is really fucked up, look how terrible this is. Like, they're in this long-term dom sub relationship,
and this thing that runs through the entire book is that, like, and I was reading an article that was saying, you know, BDSM is presented as a pathology.
Yeah.
It's not presented as a thing people do for pleasure.
Yeah.
Because they enjoy it. It's presented as like some sort of deviant, again, deviance kind of thought process. So essentially, then you get like two chapters of the contract. I felt like I was back at legal fucking mind, law school.
How do you feel about the contract? Was it?
It sucked.
Can you be legally bound in a...
No, and they make a... She makes a point of saying that it's not legal. Like, he can't legally bind her in that way. It's just not a thing. It's essentially just a method to, like, go through the okays and not okays.
There would have to be some level of discussion around
Yeah, and they have things like, you know, hard limits, right? And his hard limits are hard, you know. No acts involving urination or defecation, no acts involving needles, no acts involving gynecological medical instruments.
Fair, that's fair. All of those are fair.
Leave any permanent marks on the skin, breath control, direct contact of electric current.
Wait, breath control?
Yeah. Fire play, you know, these. So, like, you know, quite. And then, but her response is, ugh, he has to write these down? Of course, they all look very sensible and, frankly, necessary, dot, dot, dot. Any sane person wouldn't want to be involved in this sort of thing, surely. Oh. Though I now feel a little queasy.
Again, like, shaming within a book that's supposedly supposed to be, like...
Yeah. There's
positive?
Yeah. There's a lot of...
Also, like, yes, you need to be that explicit. Yeah. Like, what are you going to do? Sign a fucking contract and the next thing it gets out a fucking flamethrower?
Yeah. Well, she signs an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement, without looking at it. She doesn't fucking look at it, she just signs it.
But I'll make sure I always come to you with my contracts for BDSM and NDA.
I mean, I did say this is a shittily drafted contract and he should fire his sex lawyer. So they have a lot of email flirty banter, they meet each other's parents, it just goes on this real heteronormative couple thing in the end. And then you, like, it's quite far in that they get to some kinky sex. In the end, he beats her. She says, you know, I want to feel the worst punishment, essentially. And he beats her. And then she leaves. And it's left on this, like, will they ever get together
kind
of thing. She leaves and she says, this is what you really like? Me like this? I use the sleeve of the bathrobe to wipe my nose. He gazes at me warily. Well, you are one fucked up son of a bitch. Anna, he pleads shocked. Don't you dare Anna me. You need to sort your shit out, Gray. And with that, I turn stiffly and I walk out of the playroom, closing the door quietly behind me. And it's, I mean, it's just, it's really essentially like the whole thing. She's like, show me, I whisper, show me how much it can hurt. What? Punish me. I want to know how bad it can get. It's like this constant, she's consenting to things, but she hates them.
Yeah.
And she does it, and it's explicit. She does it because she doesn't want to lose him.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, which is not...
consent.
And it's also just not what BDSM is supposed to be about.
No. For a man who's never had vanilla sex before, this whole fucking book is so full of vanilla sex that, like, you don't get to kinky stuff until quite far in. So I'm assuming... But, and what I've read is that essentially what happens is that they go back to vanilla sex later on in the book.
Yeah, and they end up getting married.
Yeah, because... it's seen as, like, healing and emotional, and the kinky sex is seen as abnormal. You know, that's kind of what it is. Every time they have vanilla sex, it's, like, this real caring thing, and BDSM is not shown in that way at all. It's not shown that it's even possible to care and have those sorts of things in it. So I did just want to play a real quick game of virginity bingo.
Oh, no. Okay.
Because... she's a virgin, obviously.
Of course she's a virgin!
I will say on the positives, I do have two positives about the sexy scenes outside of the kink thing. Period sex.
Oh!
There's a period sex scene.
Period
which was
gonna... sex. Yeah. Period sex.
He, like, pulls her tampon out.
Oh,
period
sex. Oh. Yeah. I would be... I think I would be mortified if someone...
I would be like, what if it comes out? You know, like, sometimes there's extra blood up there, you know? And it just...
also, like, I kind of hate the sensation of a tampon coming out.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of like a little, like...
it's not sexy. Well, I mean, maybe for some.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? And, they... so they talk a lot about birth control. And they discuss safe words. So he says up front, like, yellow, red, safe words, right? Yellow to slow, red to stop. Yep. But she never uses them.
Well, she doesn't feel safe to use them.
So, virginity tropes.
Oh, no. Did they break her hymen? Did she bleed?
So, oh, that's the other thing. She uses down there to mean vagina.
Oh.
In a lot of the sex scenes. The effects of which travel all the way down there. Ooh, there is always italicized.
My mysterious down there.
Okay. My breathing is still ragged as I come down from my orgasm. Because she has...
Does she come at the drop of a hat?
Yeah. Yeah, she does.
Of course she fucking really, does.
She once comes in her sleep.
No, what? I mean, I'm jealous.
I know, I'm so jealous. Yeah, she has a dream about him hitting her with a riding crop and she comes.
I mean, that's pretty hot.
Yeah.
But also, like, I don't believe it.
Yeah. His hand moves down my waist to my hips and then cups me intimately, ... Jeez. His finger slips through the fine lace and slowly circles around me. There, italicized. Briefly, he closes his eyes and his breathing hitches. You're so deliciously wet. God, I want you. Then he pulls off his pants and she looks at his penis, kneels up and pulls a condom onto his considerable length. Oh no, ... Will it? How? Don't worry, he breathes, his eyes on mine. You expand too.
Oh. Oh, no. I mean, kudos for condoms.
Yeah, yeah, they're big on the safe sex, which is also a good one.
I hope they're cleaning all their sex toys.
Arg. I cry as I feel a weird pinching sensation deep inside me as he rips through my virginity.
Oh, dear.
Then he like fingers her for a little bit and then puts his hand up for her to lick. Classic move. I taste the saltiness on his thumb and the faint metallic tang of blood. We both glance down at the bed at the same time. There's blood on the sheets, evidence of my lost virginity. Well, ding, ding, ding.
Bingo! Yahtzee! Fucking hell.
So that was the condensed about 10 pages.
That's insane though, like to go from virginity to Red Room of Pain in what? How many days? Like a couple of weeks, if that?
Yeah, like a week and a half, 2 weeks or something. I think this book takes place over like 2 months or something.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, so it's this kind of, they do that and then they... There is, like, the final sex scene is probably the kinkiest, and it's, like, pretty hot. Okay, yeah. So here's the other thing. Some of the best parts of this book were the sex.
Yeah, okay.
Like, the sex was actually fine. It's just I couldn't get out of my head about all of the terrible things that were going on around
this. Of course, yeah.
That wasn't, like...
And, like, maybe that's part of the popularity as well. It's, like, people are maybe willing to overlook all the other terrible stuff if the sex is... good and it gets you going.
Yeah, so, you know, essentially she goes into the Red Room of Pain in the last one and one of the lines is, and this is why I can't get out of my head with this stuff, because it's this line. After all he's done, I have to man up and take whatever he decides he wants, whatever he thinks he needs.
Man up.
Yeah, problematic.
God.
But essentially he ties her to the bed, he blindfolds her, and he puts headphones on her playing, like, this choral music. He's also really into, like, opera and shit, because of course he is. And then he...
That also sounds a little bit American Psycho.
Yeah, it's a little, like, it's a little too decadent, you know? And then he uses a riding crop that he bought that's exactly the same as the one she had a dream about.
Yeah, okay.
And, like, drags it over her body and, you know... hits her on her clit, which is, like, great aim. And then just, like, kind of plays with her for a bit and then has sex with her while she's, like, tied up on the bed.
Yeah, like, stuff. That's hot.
Super hot. And she can't, like, she can't even hear. You know, all of her senses are kind of gone except for touch.
Yeah. Because
she's got the music, she's got the blindfold. See, it's a like, lot of into it. Sensory deprivation stuff, which is super cool.
Yeah. It's a shame about all of the nonsense around it. And I think that's, like, it's frustrating, right? Because, like... There are really healthy, ethical, consensual ways to practice BDSM and to like combine sex and pain, but they do require some level of self-knowledge and being able to reflect on what it is you actually like want and need, and communication skills and some level of emotional maturity.
I think the best thing that I read was this quote from Esther Perel, who is a sex therapist. And it said, she said, I find it amazing that this country at this point is going to spill quantities of ink talking about 50 Shades when it doesn't even have a basic education on sex.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is so spot on.
You know, like,
we just skipped ahead.
Yeah. It's like this. We've taken something out of its context, put it into the mainstream, and now just like run wild. And I was thinking about it on a kind of personal note. And I was thinking about, you know, my part, like having casual sex during this time, and thinking about the amount of like the increase that I saw without realizing, and I'm not sure that it's exactly caused by 50 Shades, but the increase that I saw of things like choking.
Yeah, totally.
Things like pulling hair.
Yeah.
All of this without asking any consent whatsoever. Yeah. Because it was just normal mainstream.
Yeah.
Sex now.
I was thinking similarly, like choking, hair pulling, some spanking, all pretty like regarded as pretty standard.
And the problem is that what is regarded as standard is regarded as not needing consent.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the thing. Like, it's like the acts have expanded without the need to talk about it. So, yeah. Like, if consent was also in the mainstream, it wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, totally.
Because we'd be able to talk about it. But it's not. You end up halfway through and suddenly someone's hands are around your throat.
Yeah.
And that can be an incredibly triggering experience. Absolutely. For a lot of people.
So many people. And that, I think, is like one of the biggest issues with this book, is that it strips this idea of kink and BDSM from a really important context that, in, you know, that brings in trust and communication and consent.
So I guess the question is, like, why was it so popular? And yeah, I read this interesting stat actually that said 9% of practicing Christian women in America have read at least the first book, which is roughly the same as the percentage of all women who have read 50 Shades across the country.
Yeah. Well, something that I think is really apparent from what I've read and also from what I'm hearing from you is that, like, the book seems to reflect back, like, conventional, like, traditional values, mm-hmm. with, like, this sort of, like, thin layer of something a little bit more exciting and daring and out there over the top. But, like, at its core is kind of this, like, very formulaic, we've been here before, we know the storyline, very like adhering to sort of prescribed gender roles in terms of, I mean, they use the language of dom sub, but it's kind of just falls into the trap of like male female kind of.
Yeah. And if anything, it kind of like, it felt like to me that they were using this dom sub terminology to excuse really, really traditional gender roles.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no, 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 it's just because he's dominant,
yeah.
that he pays for all of her stuff and yeah. showers these expensive gifts on her.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, because she's a sub that she has this lower power dynamic in every aspect of their lives.
Totally.
And it's like, no.
And I think that does have a role to play in how it became so popular, because like the romance genre like holds up the rest of publishing, really. Mm. And the areas that they're most popular are often, you know, middle-aged women, essentially, and a lot of women in the US in some of the more conservative areas. And so when you have something like 50 Shades of Grey that still ticks that box, it's going to be more popular than something that was like more genuinely like subversive, because it's not subversive. I don't think it's subversive in any way.
No. And yeah, it's actually, I was also reading that in the first couple of years after their publication, the overall romance novel market saw an increase.
Yeah.
So it people did, yeah. were buying more romance books afterwards. And I think a lot of that is like, it was so in the mainstream, it became more okay to buy romance,
which is I think a good outcome.
I mean, it's complicated, right? Like the story is complicated as well.
and
its consequences are complicated. There are positives and there are negatives. It's about kind of where you fall on the side. To me, there were too many negatives in that book. I have more concern now having read it than I did before having just read people's opinions on it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Like,
so for those who like kind of like don't comprehend just how popular this book is, we're talking over 125 million copies translated into 52 languages. At the height of its popularity, it was selling 2 copies every second.
Oh my God.
So there's something that I found really fascinating, and given that we've had a conversation about fanfic in the past, so this did start as fanfic, as we mentioned before. Also, a side note, before she called herself E.L. James, her old pseudonym was Snow Queen's Ice Dragon.
She'd fit in Field.
And it was originally called The Master of the Universe. And because there's such a huge community of Twilight fans who also write fan fiction, and the fan fiction community is like fiercely loyal and really active, essentially this book rose to like, because the question that a lot of people ask, I think, is like, well, how does just like one shitty romance book get so big compared to all the other shitty romance books?
Mm.
And I think a really big part of it is that she had the backing of a huge online fanfic community. So she's kind of capitalized on that community, on the fanfic community, but also on the Twilight community. Which I think is really interesting.
And it's, so I read the first Twilight book in high school to prove a point because I'm an asshole. And I can see, like, to me it's really obvious. Yeah. Her character is so like Bella. And the problems that I had with Bella are replicated in Anna. Like this bumbling character that anybody can put their opinions and their personality onto, like... It's really similar to see. And the same relationship structure. Edward is, you know, this older...
Yeah.
You know, quite relatively controlling.
Cool, calm, collected. Yeah. So, something that stood out to me, though, was when the book was picked up by Random House and, like, formally published, they sort of acknowledged the fanfic origins but really downplayed it. And they said in a statement that, like... E.L. James had rewritten the book and that the original was like completely different works from what they have published, like really downplayed like the similarities and things like that because it is so similar to Twilight. But then some people ran it through Turnitin, which for those who haven't been at university recently is like a comparative software so you can like detect plagiarism. And they found that the original stuff that she was publishing, self-publishing as fanfic is pretty much exactly the same as what was published. And there's a whole lot of like controversy in the fanfic community because they're essentially like, you're profiting off
all of
our labor.
Yeah.
And off kind of indirectly Stephanie Meyer's work.
Yeah. Off their labor because what they commented on it or...
Well, because the process, because it was done in little installations, and the process that a lot of fanfic communities have is they offer feedback and they offer prompts for more writing. They also were some of the people who were so quick to make it like so popular that it even got published and then kind of like drove, we're talking like thousands and thousands of people online.
Yeah.
Drove that initial like word of mouth buzz.
Yeah.
And the fanfic community is just kind of like shitty.
Yeah.
About it.
Yeah, I think it is hard. It's hard to kind of go back to what we were saying at the beginning of having respect for the art form, if not the individual piece of art.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to think that people... Like, this book is essentially, like, the birth of the real mainstream idea of, like, mummy porn.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. And... It's so easy to dismiss something like this.
Yeah.
Because, quite honestly, it's very poorly written. And that is upsetting to me.
Yeah.
Because you could have, like, I wish that it had have been something that I could have enjoyed in some way.
Yeah.
Or that anybody with a critical thought, like, critical thinking lens...
Yeah.
...had turned their eye to this at any point. Like, it's not that long ago... that it shouldn't have raised red flags for someone.
Yeah. It feels like a huge missed opportunity for me. And it feels upsetting that it like essentially confirms these stereotypes about how terrible this kind of story, like how terrible romance and erotica is, and how terrible books that are written for women are. Like, it confirms that, like, really tired narrative. And so it's upsetting to, like, see that play out, you know? Mm. I find what you're saying really interesting about how you are more negative on it now that you've read it, because I think something to, like, wind this up on is to reflect a little bit about how, like, on the one hand, there are a lot of positives in that it raised awareness of female sexuality and women reading for pleasure or consuming content for pleasure.
I think also, like, a hope would be that people would talk about this.
Yeah.
Who normally wouldn't talk about something like BDSM.
Yeah.
And then they might
research it.
Yeah. Then they might look into it. You know, they might actually look further into it. That's like a hope.
Yeah.
Out of it, you know?
Yeah. But the alternative, like the opposing argument to that is it does more harm than good because it perpetuates such negative ideas around BDSM, completely misrepresents BDSM and conflates it with abuse and sexual violence in a way that just kind of is not savable. And I think that that's a sort of tricky thing to grapple with. I think it's a bit of column A, column B, but it sounds like, having read it.
Yeah. I think the thing for me is that it was quite upsetting to read, I think. And I don't know if maybe I had have read it earlier, I would have thought differently. I definitely don't think I would have had as strong of a reaction, but it felt different to the other romances that we've read that have been problematic. It was so entwined in this.
So I did put it to Instagram to find out what some of our followers think. So in general, not a super popular book amongst our followers. So like I asked at one point, like, what people's impression of it was. And got things like, it just kind of seemed like a slightly racier Mills and Boone.
Yep, definitely.
Glamorizes abuse, super heteronormative, hated it.
Yep.
And
there is a point there, like, they do also make some, like, light, no homo jokes in it. Yeah.
God. And then this one I thought summed it up really nicely. Tacky and predictable. At some point I asked as well about whether they thought it was like a fair representation of BDSM, and people were commenting things like that there was a lack of communication, there's no trust between them, perpetuated like bad stereotypes, this like deviant idea. And then I liked this one that acknowledged that it touched on some really basic concepts, but kind of felt like the bras and things version of BDSM. Which will only be funny to bra shoppers in Australia.
Yeah, but that's so on point. Yeah. That's so on point.
A lot of people got in touch, like, kind of saying that, like, it seemed like a lot of people really reluctantly read it. Like, they read it because they could recognize that it's, like, a cultural phenomenon and wanted to know what the hype was about. Which I get. I get that. I think it's understandable. But you could almost sense in some of the comments coming from people that it was like, yeah, I read it, but here's why I read it. Like, I didn't like, like it.
Yeah, when I bought this from Savers for $3, I was like, put it quickly on the counter, face down.
Well, I think that's really interesting because it's like, yes, it's brought into the mainstream, but it hasn't really dealt with any of the shame.
Yeah, but also I think at this point we've come full circle. Like, it's shameful to have it. Like, there's been so many op-eds about it.
Yeah.
That particularly for women of our age.
Totally.
Like, having it is a bit like, oh.
There's also, I think, it's an interesting, like, almost like a classist aspect to it. Like, this sort of, like, highbrow, lowbrow dichotomy. And obviously people like something about it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's no questioning that. People are reading it. And then you've got, like, the critiques and the reviewers who I think kind of hold themselves on a different level.
Yeah.
Sort of, like, poo-pooing it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's good, but...
Yeah. No, it does. It's like you intellectualize it so much that it's like, oh, well, I don't like it because me, an intellectual, you know? And then, therefore, everyone who does like it is on this lower, which happens across the board with romance.
Yeah.
Like, it's something that I thought about a lot when I was reading it because I did truly, truly hate it.
Yeah.
So So I was like, where can I go with this without sounding, yeah, like incredibly classist and without doing the exact same thing that people do to romance in general? And obviously, I didn't succeed in not doing that.
And we will eventually do a proper episode on a more in-depth look at BDSM, aside from 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think we could have done it. I think, like, lumping the two in together is actually... because this is not BDSM.
No.
You know, and we should find something that actually shows it as is.
Yeah, I agree. Books
left. Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.